Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another spoiler review with me, a Border Prince. Today we're talking about Angron, slave of Nuceria. And where to begin with this? I think it was good. Before we get stuck in, I think it was good. But I felt like it was unnecessary. Which I don't normally say. I normally like to know all the various bits and bobs. But there is something, there is certainly something to a bit of mystique. Now, we all know the Angron story because it's been pretty set in stone from the beginning. He is Spartacus. That's it, really. He's Spartacus. And when you explain that, it makes sense. You don't have to go into details. You don't have to show him in the slave pens. We all understand what probably happened. And I like that. That being said, I'm happy they've done the book. And really, I don't know what else you can do with the Angron character other than this. Other than tell this story. What are you going to do for a Primarch novel but tell this story? Now, they've mixed it up a bit because it tells that and also tells how the Legion went down the dark path and accepted the Butcher's Nails and how they got the technology to have the Butcher's Nails. Because it was a whole problem. They couldn't recreate them because they were created using a lost technology. And I'll get into that at the end. Because it doesn't quite make sense, if you follow. It doesn't quite make sense. Anyway, what's the story? So there's a planet called Genna. And Genna is populated by human simulacrum, I don't know how to say it, who are sort of human-like creatures that are controlled by actual humans, but humans who evolutionarily have devolved into, they can only exist in these tanks, life-sustaining tanks with, you know, medical apparatus set up and stuff. And they control this huge population of people with their minds, and one of them can control thousands of them, and they appear to live their life through these beings. Now, they're also trying to ascend to another plane of existence, which, if you're a fan of conspiracy theories and not so conspiracy theories as well, stuff that's actually happening, it's an interesting concept, and I like that it's been explored, if only a little bit. There wasn't as much as I would have liked. I would have liked some history on how this planet got to this point, but nothing. Also, this planet doesn't have any weapons, as we'll get to in a moment, which, again, seems odd. But yeah, they're basically controlling this vast population of cyborgs, I guess you'd say, with psychic powers and living in these giant cities all over the planet. And, like, there's thousands of them in these sort of honeycomb stacks, very much like the Matrix, I guess, if you want to visualise it. But an interesting society, nonetheless. Fine. Great stuff. The guys are dispatched there, and they meet the representatives and they realise that they are not human. And you have this amazing moment with Majo, who's the main sort of, the main character in this, to be honest. He's holding his spear, and when he realises they're not human, he's gripping his spear so hard, it creaks, which I thought was a nice moment. The planetary invasion begins because Khan says, well, you know what he's going to say. So they have a massive planetary invasion. They're met by a wall of people. Now, as I say, this planet's got no weapons, and the Warhounds are forced to... They get bogged down, basically. They're a very disciplined force. They're a very restrained force. They're brutal killers, like all Astartes, but they're known for their silence when they enter combat, that sort of thing. Very much not what the World Eaters become, as we'll see. And yeah, they become bogged down. These people are just grabbing the Astartes by weight of numbers, pulling off their helmets, gouging out their eyes, that sort of thing. And they're working so hard. Oh, and also they can't get planetary bombardments in because during a previous compliance mission, they called in planetary strikes from the fleet. Unfortunately, last time round, an accident occurred and a whole company was wiped out. And Angron went up onto the ships and killed all the captains involved. So the ships, even though they could assist, they're not going to, because it's not worth their heads. They're just not going to do it. It's a bit harsh, and also shows the old discipline that's creeping into I want to keep saying the Flesh Terrors, the World Eaters as a force, that this madman's running around. So they're trying to do it so quickly because they have a time limit set on them by Angron of 36 hours. because that's how long it took him and his slave army to take out the city on their planet. And that's what he set these guys, you know, and how can they not do this, these vaunted warriors? If you're so good, do it like this. I did it with just slaves, an army of slaves. Which again, shows he's mental. Anyway, they fail in this. They go back to the fleet. There's a big ceremony. They're shamed in front of their brothers. They have to give themselves black marks. And Angron rages at them. And he loses it completely because Majo refuses to carry out the punishment that he's ordered for their failure, which is decimation. So every single compliance for the last couple of years, and they failed in every attempt to do it in 36 hours, because it's super arbitrary and not necessary at all. He's ordered decimation on the legion. And for those who don't know, decimation is an old Roman thing. When the Roman legions failed in combat, once they got back to camp, they would have decimation, which was 1 in 10 of them would be picked out and his comrades would have to beat him to death. And that was the punishment that they had to go through. So no one wanted decimation. And that's one of the reasons why the legions very rarely broke, because of the terrible consequences that would come from that. And Major refuses. And Angron has a chat with him and gets very vicious and orders him basically to strangle someone to death. And then he goes on in Madden and has like a sort of an episode and has a flashback to New Syria and starts going about hacking people to pieces. He gets his body, the personal bodyguard of his, I believe called the Destroyers. He gets the captain of him and picks him up and rips his arms out. This is a dude in Terminator armor. And then crushes his head onto the floor, breaking his skull. And then he jumps in amongst the assembled ranks of his troops and starts hacking them to pieces. And they don't know what to do with themselves, because obviously they can't kill him. He's their father. They've got, like, on a genetic level, a love for him, which is being rebuffed all the time because he doesn't give a shit about them. He despises them. He hates them. And it's pretty brutal. So what happens then is the librarians, who are still in the Legion, but a very limited number of them, they're kept away from the Primarch completely because their psychic power irritates his butcher's nails. But I think that might be more to do with him. And there's a reason for that, because during his time as a gladiator, he had to fight psychers. And because of his own psychic talent, which appears to have been lost to a certain extent. But we'll get to that in a moment. Basically, they managed to create using all of their collective psychic power, they managed to knock him out and trick his mind into thinking about the last time he was incapacitated. And unfortunately, one of the librarians is dragged into this memory thing with him. Now, I will say, this is a bit too on the nose. I think this is too much of an obvious plot point. You get me? It's a bit too... Oh, come on. You could have done something else. It's a bit too predictable, you know? Like, oh no, I'm sucked in and now I relive all of his memories with him. You know, come on, man. Anyway, that's what happens. So he's in a coma. And we learn all the stuff about his early life. For instance, when he wakes up, he's pursued by what appear to be Dark Eldar, I would say. From the nature of the things that are describing with the blades and so on, I believe it's Dark Eldar. Now, whether they're there to kill him because of what he is, or whether they just chanced upon this creature that is going to be a good slave, a good take, I don't know. But that's what happens. And then he's captured by the Nusarians and placed in a slave pit. And, I mean, without going into detail, some of the activities in the arena are very imaginative. But basically, to cut a long story short, it is 40k Spartacus, okay? And he befriends these other gladiators. They create like a sort of family, a culture of honour. And it's also, you see, the genetic coding that the Emperor's put into the Primarchs to be a certain way, you see it gradually get corrupted by the environment. But he still tries to find some kind of honour, some kind of purpose. And he gets that through the adulation of the crowd by fighting honourably with his fellow gladiators. That sort of thing. And he hates the High Riders and begins to think of how to rebel. We also get the moment where he takes the pain from a young lad who's suffering quite heavily. And like, I mean, literally, like, psychically takes the pain, and other people see it, other gladiators. And there's a moment where they're all asleep and they're all in a big human chain, all touching each other as someone is touching him. And he's taking in all of the pain that they suffer into himself. And he sees it all as well, which it would be an interesting skill, would be an interesting talent. For instance, like, if he was on a planet, I don't know, man, you can see where Angron could have been a force for pure good. You know, he understands the pain of others and so forth, and takes away their agonies and frees them from the pains of the past and all that sort of stuff. But because of where he is, it's become corrupted. And because of what happens later, he gets rid of it. And the Butcher's nails also suppress it, or have eroded it from his brain. Hard to say. But that's what happens with him, basically. And he leads a revolt. And that's when the Emperor comes. But we don't get that moment either, which is disappointing, considering the story. Considering that you're telling all this other shit, they don't tell the moment where the Emperor comes before him. And I'm surprised by that. I am very surprised by that. But, oh well. I guess we've seen that other places. Kind of. So what's happening while he's in this coma? There's a power struggle going on within the Legion. With Majo, who's one of the more renowned captains, one of the more renowned centurions in the Legion. Going up against those who want to fully integrate the Butcher's Nails. And a lot of people are against this because they see the insanity that it's brought to Angron. But it's kind of a split. A lot of them are in favour of the Butcher's Nails because they want to be like Angron. Again, there's a psychic and psychological and genetic need to be like their father, to have his affection as children. This is it. It's an emotional thing as well that they want. And the fact that he's punishing them so much because they're failing to meet up to his fearsome abilities. You can see where they're coming from. Now, Majo goes and speaks with the Dreadnought that is the first Legion Master who's alive in the Dreadnought, the first Dreadnought of the Warhounds. And they agree that this has to be stopped. Now, unfortunately for them, they're opposed in this by the apothecary, Garland Serlach, who is the guy who is attempting to recreate the Butcher's Nails. Now, he's failed in every attempt, and they keep doing experiments, and it doesn't work. They either kill the patient, or they turn into rage-filled nutters who have to be put down. They can't be controlled at all. And this is because there's a lack in their scientific knowledge of how the STC, how the technology works. And they're looking for an STC template, because obviously all human technology stems from that, to bridge that gap and allow them to recreate the Butcher's Nails, because at present they can't. This comes from Genna, who have this giant psychic and mechanical, it appears, ability to control thousands of people with brain implants and stuff like that. They're all connected mentally. And it's because that they're using an STC technology, and they're the missing link in their efforts to recreate the Butcher's Nails. So they can immediately start reproducing them. And that's what they begin to do. And he's working towards it, and he's almost completed it. And that's what spurred Majo on to suddenly make his move. Now the Primarch's out of action as well. And they want to take the Primarch to the Emperor and to get help for the Emperor to cure him. Little did they know, the Emperor already came to a decision on that and was happy to let him go and do what he's doing now. But still, there's this power struggle. And Garland Serlach is actually a friend of Fabius Boyle, which is always a bad sign. even though he despises him as well. He can respect his ability. And I suppose there's a bigger thing of Majo thinks that he's a warrior. And this is something that's come up in a lot of different sort of Horus Heresy stories and 40k stories. The Space Marines fooling themselves into thinking they're warriors, when really they are transhuman killing machines built for one purpose only. They're not built to rule. They're not built to be nice. They're not built to be heroes. They're there to destroy the enemies of humanity without mercy. And this is the struggle you've got now between those who have some sense of honour and those who think that the honour thing is worthless, like the apothecary, who wants to turn them into the ultimate warriors, who are just going to murder everything, as is their purpose. You can see his logic. You can. Now, before we go further, I'll just mention the fact that there is an episode that's recounted within this tale of Angron leaving the Legion for 2 years as he attempts to find something that will kill him. And he ends up on a feral world. Khan finds him there. They eventually end up putting tracking things in his armour so they can always find him, which is a bit much because he's done this a lot. And it basically ends up Khan swearing to him that he'll do anything if you'll just lead us. And they go through a whole thing of him discussing the pointlessness of the Emperor's ambitions to conquer the universe, all empires die, all that sort of thing. And it's interesting. It's interesting. But I just want to show that he was at the point where he was suicidal, basically. He couldn't destroy himself, but he was trying to find something that would kill him. And this is... Khan brings him back from this by swearing that the Legion will do anything he commands. You know, he will do anything he commands. And that's what brings Angron back. So anyway, continuing on with the story. This power struggle ends when Majo sends a guy to try and destroy this prototype of the Butcher's Nails that the apothecary's managed to build that works. Unfortunately, he gets stopped, and it's nice how he gets stopped. The apothecary shoots him with a poison, fills him up with a poison from Fabius Vile, which gradually shuts down all his organs. And instead of letting him die as well, because he's sort of saying that you're afraid of the future, you've got to embrace what we truly are. This is perfection, you know, this is true perfection, not like what the Emperor's children are after. This is pure, by embracing pure rage, we can be who we're meant to be. We truly meant to be. Just utter rage-filled, hateful berserkers. So it makes me think whether this guy is a bit chaos corrupted. There's hints, you know. Particularly when he uses a drill to kill this Astartes who's dying anyway. And rams the drill head through his eye. And drills out his brain, obviously. Yeah, interesting character. I hope we see more of him. Anyways, Khan volunteers to be the first to take the nails, which upsets Majo and the other guys, because obviously Khan is the most well-known and most respected of the Brotherhood, of the Legion. And he takes the Butcher's Nails, and it is great how he describes Khan getting them, you know, the tap-tap of the nails on his head getting banged into his skull, into his brain matter, the machinery intertwining itself with his brain, and the sound of tick, tick. It's quite good. Khan goes on a mental session. He slaughters a bunch of people, but he manages to control himself, so he isn't put down. Quality. Absolutely quality. Excellent moments. And that's when Angron comes to him and tells him to come, my son. Because he's funnily like him. He's like Angron now. And obviously this has a massive effect. 1,000 World Eaters are given the nails immediately, and they launch a planetary assault back on Genna again to finish off the remains of the population. And it's a great way of showing the rage and how happy Angron is that these guys are... They've got the same mentality as his gladiator kin did, of berserker fury, of rage, of just a burning need to slaughter, like he has. And that's what happens. And it's a great moment, and it really displays this compared to the methodic, disciplined approach of the guys in the first round of the planetary invasions. This second is just pure anger. The gunships come down. The guys are jumping out of the ship, of the doorways on the ships before it's even landed, landing and running into the enemy with their chain axes. And there's also a great moment where they're hungering to hear that their bolt guns are empty. Their bolt pistols are empty. Because that means that they can get rid of them and just go at the enemy with their fucking hands. You know, they've got no excuse there to hold back. They can charge. And it's a massacre. It's absolutely just gore everywhere. Pure destruction. And they move into the city. Then Majo and his loyalists, if you want to call them that, they land on the planet behind them, and they encounter some of the World Eaters. They see what's become of them, covered in gore, eating the enemy. They're just out of it completely, just berserkers. And it ends in a confrontation. The librarian tries to reason with Angron, saying, you know, I've seen your past. And Angron's just like, no, that's all gone now. That Angron died. This is me now. I am what I am. And I'm going to just kill everything. I'm going to be a shining example in the Emperor's eyes of a murderous killer. And fuck him. And everybody who stands with me has got to be like this. Well, that's the only way I'm going to have any respect for you. And that's how it ends. With Angron beating the librarian to a pulp. And there we go. So, what did I think of this? Like I said at the beginning, it felt like it didn't need to be told, this story. I'm glad it has, and I'm glad it picked up on, you know, for instance, the implementation of the Butcher's Nails, the condition of the Legion, in the fact that they're going insane, because Angron's a nutter, and he keeps punishing them for not being as insane as him. The conflict with those, mostly of Terran stock, it should be said, who are utterly against the transformation that Angron is trying to create in the Legion, and what the future will be for them as they're turned into mindless savages in their eyes. There's also good stuff on Angron's mentality, which I guess does fill him out a little bit. I mean, like I said, we don't have that moment when he meets the Emperor. We don't have that. That's in other novels, I guess. But I would have preferred something a bit more meaty on that area. And, you know, there's a good moment where Angron describes how he says that thing that calls it, that demands I call it father, which I think is a nice touch. Because it might be that Angron sees him for who he truly is. Not just that he's like this lord that's commanding him to kill, like the High Riders did. But also perhaps he sees the Emperor for what he truly is, the being he truly is, without any of the veneer, like others can. He's not tricked by it, I guess. Yeah. His anger against the Emperor is interesting, because it's kind of like, well, why even bother leading your legion at that point? I guess just because something to do, something that's hardwired into him to do, but he's going to do it in the most, I don't know. It's kind of like a teenager, just, oh yeah, okay, I'll do it, and you're just doing it in the worst possible way ever. The most rage-filled thing ever. Like a child, you know? that's where I go with it. I mean, I try to like the character Angron, because he's got a good backstory, but I don't know, man. It just seems petulant. Petulant. Psychotically petulant. And the fact that he's trying to turn... I don't know what he's aiming for with the... turning them into insane people. Berserkers. I don't know whether he's just trying to recreate that family. Because he's going to feel some kind of affection for them, because they're his genetic sons. And that's going to be hardwired into him, that instinct. See, I want to see it as like a nihilistic urge for destruction that he's embracing. But I'm not too sure whether that really captures what it is. I don't know. I really don't know. But either way, the Emperor's to blame. Oh, and before we go on, there is a great moment where one of the Warhounds recounts how they did everything the Emperor commanded on Terra. They fought with him all over the planet. They even fought with him against the Thunder Warriors, which I thought was a nice point there. And it's something that's recounted again and again. Like, what are we? What's our purpose? And, well, their purpose is to be killing machines. So I can understand the logic of those who want to strip away the remnants of humanity that they have and fully embrace what they're meant to be, that they're full capabilities. But on the other hand, it's that element of humanity that stops them being monsters, which by stripping that away, it destroys, you know, you see, that's what Chaos Corruption does to them. It's some of them anyway. I mean, obviously for others, like for instance, the Emperor's children, it's the embracing of their human urges that corrupts them. So there's different things going on. It's an interesting take. Again, I don't know whether this tale was necessary, but they kind of have to do a Primarch story for all of them, and this is a way of, I don't know, just okay, well, this is this thing that we know has happened, here's the detail on it. That's what it kind of felt like, but it was still good. It wasn't badly written, it wasn't badly put together, it was a good read, a good story, so I can't complain about it on that level. It just felt a bit, I don't know, just a bit you know, a bit of a trial, like nothing, there was no revelation in it, you know. There was nothing like, oh my god, that's incredible. There's also a bit of an odd plot point. In the Master of Mankind novel, The Emperor asks Arkan Lan to visit him and give him advice about Angron. And he has Angron there doing like experiments on him, trying to sort out the butcher's nails. And he asks him, can this be removed? And Arkan Lan's like, nah, it's too deeply integrated. You can't save him. You'll kill him if you try and take that out of his head. And this is what happens in the novel as well. The apothecary says the same thing. But this is before then. And this is the Emperor making the argument that, well, you know, even though he is damaged, he'll still be effective, not as effective as he would be without them. This was an unforeseen sort of result, something that I didn't actually plan on. And we are where we are. The Emperor made a judgment saying, well, you know, it would be a waste just to get rid of him after all the effort. So may as well put him to use. He won't be as effective. But, you know, you play your cards. What can you do? Now, that's a great moment in the book. And one of the things that people hate, because it makes the Emperor out to be a bastard. But, you know, it's a completely logical choice. Yes, I could destroy him right now, but I could send him off. Yes, he's mental, but he will still do good work for me. And this is kind of the truth of the whole thing. I mean, that's exactly how the Emperor's looking at him. Kind of. Although Angron remembers it, the Emperor's demanding that he calls him father, which I could see the Emperor doing. And Angron just won't bend the knee to him in that regard, which is a nice touch as well. It's a good story. That does seem like a bit of an error, though, in the timeline, I have to say, because when did that happen? Because the World Eaters picked up Angron on New Syria, and that was, we're led to believe, pretty soon after he was captured. So what, the Emperor took him back to Terra to do an experiment on him? Or did the Emperor do some Jedi distance shit and present Arkan Land with some kind of psychic manifestation of him as the scientist, because that's how he works? He shows people that their idealized vision of himself. He's like a mirror, and asking him for advice so he could get Arkan Lan to think of the ideas and then leech his mind for the information, because that's also what he does, because he's a filthy psychic vampire. Oh, brilliant, someone subscribed while I was recording. Fantastic. Anyway, it ends with, and there's a couple of moments in the book where he pulls extracts from this work. Khan wrote a book, The History of the 18 Legions, and it has extracts from them, and it ends on an extract from that. And Khan's basically saying, what did you expect to happen? If anyone's to blame for this and what happened and everything else, it's the Emperor. And he's right. He's right. He sums it up perfectly. The nice touch is, Khan is in the 41st millennium invading this planet. And he realizes it's Genna in a moment of, like, his mind comes to. And he sees a statue. And it's like, they obviously put up a statue to remember Majo after the scouring, after they figured out what happened, I guess. The Imperium's authorities, the Inquisition or Gilliman or someone, put up a statue of Majo. Obviously in remembrance of the sacrifice he made here and the attempt he made to stop Angron transforming the World Eaters into monsters, into utter rage-filled abominations. You know, awesome dudes like Khan. And Khan sees this statue and he has a moment of realization as he sees all this. It's like he comes to for a moment and then he gets angry. Tick, tick, tick. And he goes and charges the statue and rips it apart. And it's a good little moment. It's a nice little thing that... And it's a good way to end it with Khan, who's the symbol of the World Eaters now, of a corn berserker, the best corn berserker, the most awesome, badass character in the universe, frankly. And yeah, he's just basically saying, well, what did you expect to happen? What did you think was going to happen? Of course. What choice did we have, Eva, you know? He's our father. So, yeah, in conclusion, I don't know, like, I'd give this, like, a 7 out of 10. Purely because there was no, like, massive revelation. It was well put together, but it was exactly as I expected it to be, if you understand where I'm coming from. It's well done, but predictable. Other than that, fantastic. Good job, a good read, and definitely worth reading if you're into, if you want to cover the heresy, if you want to know more about the Primarchs and stuff. It fills in gaps, but again, there's something to be said for a little bit of mystery, you know? But anyway, that's all I've got for you today. Thanks very much for watching. If you wouldn't mind giving this video a like, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know below what you think. I'd be interested to see how people view Angron, because, I don't know, man, I've got mixed feelings on it. But it'd be interesting to see what some of you guys think as well. Only some of you. Some of you can sod off. I don't care what you think. yeah. If you'd like to help the channel out, become a Patreon or a channel member, please use the links below. I'd appreciate that. But yeah, otherwise, another fucking subscriber. Okay. I'll see you later. Thanks very much for watching. And next time I record, I'll turn OBS off. All right. Have a good week. Cheers.